Mysterious powers. You have them. Everybody does. Powers of mind and spirit. Powers that cannot be explained. What's real and what isn't. What works and what doesn't. Join Ann Streber in her investigations of everything from luck to health to miracles to mysteries of the mind. And now, here's Ann Streber with Mysterious Powers Radio.
Hi, this is Ann Streber from Mysterious Powers, and I'm back today with a very exciting guest, Paul Elder, who wrote a wonderful book called Eyes of an Angel. And this is a book about someone who went out of their body, had near-death experiences, met angels, guardian angels, visitors, aliens, whatever you would call them. And it's just an amazing book. And he explains and talks about all this so clearly. Paul, welcome to my show.
Well, thank you very much. My pleasure.
Well, Paul, I wanted to say first that I am a classic dumb American because I know more about Afghanistan than I know about Canada. And I think I'm pretty typical in that. Could you tell me, you're a pretty famous person in Canada, am I right?
Well, I don't know about famous. Sometimes infamous might be a better word.
Well, that's as good as famous these days.
Well, you see, I'm a former television news reporter and mayor of a city in Canada.
My goodness.
And there are certainly, you know, people who know of me, and the release of the book, you know, is certainly catching a lot of attention in various circles, and certainly with the people back home in the city that I was mayor in, Swift Current, Saskatchewan, and in the on the Vancouver Island where I now live.
Well, this is fascinating. So, you don't find it, I don't know if the right word is embarrassing, but you don't find it too revealing to talk about these very personal things in a book and in public.
Well, you know, I thought, you know, for years I was a politician. I was the mayor of the city for 9 years and a counselor for 9 years, so a total of 18 years, and I was a businessman. And in a fundamental, rather a fundamental Christian community. So it was, for many years, obviously, it was something that I didn't really spend a lot of time discussing with a lot of people, the events and the experiences that I was having. The near-death experiences, for example, people could accept that more than talking about out-of-body experiences.
Yes, uh-huh.
However, it was something that I had to, you know, certainly be careful of as a politician, certainly around election time at any rate. So it was an interesting mixture, and you know, it provided for some funny and wonderful anecdotes over the years. And but it isn't, even though it is revealing, and I really considered that, and I thought about it a lot, and I thought the message is what is important.
Yes, I think so too. Yes.
Yeah, it's to me, it was the message that was far too important. The consequences will be whatever they will be, whether people have difficulty with it in a political sense or not. However, I just knew that it was a very, very important thing to do. People need to hear these messages.
Oh, I think they do, too. You know, one interesting thing is, as I said to you when we were talking privately, my husband Whitley, who is going to interview you for subscribers, so I hope everybody listening is a subscriber, has had some of the exact same experiences that you have had. And it's quite amazing. When I read your book, I was just flabbergasted that he went through all these stages and steps that you went through, out of going out of the body, by being surprised by it, meeting other beings, going to the Monroe Institute. It's almost like you followed the same paths. But I don't know if you know anything about what happened to me recently. I had a brain hemorrhage, and which I've written about in my diary on our website, unknowncountry.com. And I had some interesting near-death and out-of-body experiences. Well, not actually out-of-body, but I had a very interesting near-death experience in that I was taken to the world of the dead by my Siamese cat.
Oh, wonderful.
It was wonderful. And, you know, Whitley and my son were both standing by my bed in the hospital, in the ICU of the hospital, when it happened to me. And they both heard me say, "I can't believe it. Co is here." They both heard me say that. And I later decided that Co was really my mother coming in the guise of Co the cat, because my mother died when I was a very little girl, and I don't have any photos of her, and I probably wouldn't recognize her. But I think she knew I would recognize good old Co the cat, and so she came in disguise as the cat to show me that there is life after death. She gave me that gift.
What a wonderful story.
It is a wonderful story.
And it does really resonate with so many of the things that I've learned.
Well, you found out you had a brother.
Oh, yes, which was in itself sort of a remarkable revelation.
Do you want to tell that story?
Well, yes, certainly. The in one of the early out-of-body experiences that I had, excuse me, this one was at the Monroe Institute, and at some point, the face or the spirit of a young boy suddenly appeared before me in my room, and just about 11 or 12 years old, blonde-haired kid with freckles and a great big smile, just beaming. And I had never seen a spirit before, and it really shocked me to witness this. And he certainly noticed my discomfort or disbelief, and knew that it was causing me some concern or some fear. And so he just very briefly just smiled very knowingly at me, and then simply faded away. And
now, you didn't recognize him.
No, I did and I didn't. He looked so very familiar that I couldn't place it, and I just couldn't understand or place where he was. As soon as the spirit disappeared, though, of course, I was angry with myself, thinking, well, this is just the spirit of a young boy, and I had the opportunity to actually communicate with him or say something, and I didn't, and I felt so bad about that because I was too scared to. And I really regretted it, and I asked for the spirit to return, for the young boy to come back, but it wasn't to be. And then I began to realize the context of the familiarity with this young spirit. I had seen him in my dreams earlier as a child. I had dreams or recall of dreams spent playing with another childhood friend, a boy, you know, about that age, between, you know, all the way actually from probably 6 years old up to 12 years old, and then I didn't have the dreams anymore, and I knew that this was a person that I had dreamt about and had been or seemed to be very familiar. So on my return home from the Monroe Institute and this experience, I was sharing the experience with my sister, and when I told her about the feelings that I had, that this, for some reason, seemed like, you know, a brother or something like that, but you know, that was impossible, and she said, "Well, don't be surprised if it isn't, or if it is." And I said, "What? Well, how can that be? That's impossible. We have, I don't have, you know, a brother that much younger." And then she told me a story that I hadn't heard or hadn't ever recalled about my mother. We had a very large family. We were raised as Roman Catholic, so that seems to be a tendency of Catholicism back in the back in the early 50s and 60s.
Oh, yes,
a propensity for large families, and we had 11. There were 11 children in the family. I was the 10th of 11. I had a brother that was a year younger than I, and so our mother had spent probably most of her life or her adult life being pregnant or recovering from pregnancy of some sort, And apparently, according to my sister, after about a year after my brother Dale was born, my younger brother, my mother became pregnant again with a 12th child. And at some point in the pregnancy, during the summertime, a storm had passed through the farm area, and it had left quite a bit of rain around, and my mother had gone out to get some water from the well with a bucket that we had in the yard, and when she was pumping the handle, which was a wooden handle, however, it was covered with, it was still wet from the rain, lightning actually struck the well, and of course the electricity jolt went down the wet wooden handle and sent her flying and unconscious, and she lost the baby, and it was a little boy. And I had never heard that, but my sister explained that back in those years, people were very uncomfortable talking about such things, and my mother was always certainly uncomfortable about it, and so they didn't feel it was necessary, you know, to talk about it or pass this bit of knowledge on to us. And I may have known about it, but I simply had forgotten as well. But it was never, ever a part of our conversation or part of our discussion. So I was entirely surprised by it. And strangely enough, after that revelation from my sister, shortly after that, I had another dream about this boy. And then no more, or an image of a dream, and that was it. And I always wondered why that occurred, but I think it had served its purpose, and so that additional confirmation or additional connection with the spirit world was made, and that's all that needed to happen.
Or maybe he fulfilled part of his destiny by letting you know there's another world out there. Well, we're going to take a break right now, and this is Ann Strieber. It's Mysterious Powers. I'm having a wonderful time talking with Paul Elder, and we'll be right back. Hi, this is Ann Strieber with Mysterious Powers, and we're back. Paul, you told me when we were just having a private conversation that you have also seen what you think are aliens, and we were discussing about whether angels and aliens and spirits are all part of the same thing. What do you think? Tell me a little about that.
Well, I think we're certainly all connected. There's no question about that. From the things that I've learned from my spirit guides and through the near-death experiences, the two near-deaths that I've had, and the many out-of-body experiences, and the virtual tour of the other side at the hands of my spirit guides, you have to understand that I was, before these things happened to me, I would have been very much a skeptic. I would not have believed the things that I'm now talking about.
I was always a skeptic, too, and I was dragged kicking and screaming by all the people I met who had alien abduction experiences. But go ahead, go ahead.
Well, that's been pretty much my experience. Even as my spirit guides are dragging me kicking and screaming through these multitude of revelations about reality, and I mean, I had been having out-of-body experiences and floating through walls and into other dimensions, and certain things that weren't a part of my upbringing and weren't a part of my belief system. I mean, this, as if this wasn't stretching it far enough, when somebody would talk about concepts of reincarnation, perhaps it was a part of my upbringing, because the reincarnation certainly isn't a part of you know, Christianity or Catholicism, for sure.
Do you know, they say that it used to be in the old Gnostic days? But
right.
But go on, yeah.
And I've seen evidence of that within the writings of the Bible itself. And now I've forgotten entirely where I was going.
Well, let's see. You were talking about how aliens or ETs could be related to angels and spirits. And I want to tell you a little story real quick. We knew a woman once. She actually worked as our secretary, and she had had many, she's an older woman, and she'd been many times married, and, you know, she'd been a showbiz person and great gal. And she, had seen aliens many times, and she saw them with wings on their backs. And one time she was woken up by one of these ETs, and she exclaimed, she said, "Oh my God, you're horrible looking." And the ET laughed at her and said, "One day, my dear, you will look just like us." Now, isn't that wonderful?
Perhaps prophetic.
Yes. But yeah. I thought the wings was very interesting because angels are always portrayed as having wings.
Mm-hmm. It's probably a depiction that they chose from my experiences. Because as I come to know, we all have guardian angels, or for a better term, a spirit guide. And I haven't seen any yet with wings. However, there's no question as to their spiritual identity.
Well, this woman had a Catholic upbringing. Maybe that was her childhood indoctrination coming through.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's like your visitation or with the cat.
My cat lover coming through.
Right. You know, the spirit is able to, thought is a very real thing, and the power of the spirit is just tremendous. And they really can manifest whatever they wish to manifest or to appear in, usually in a form that we may be more comfortable with. So if we have a belief in angels or expect angels to perhaps wear wings, oftentimes that's what we will see. But getting back to the original point of it, I am very certain that angels, spirit guides, ourselves, our own spiritual presentation,
ETs,
is very much intermingled with consciousness of all kinds,
mm-hmm.
including what we would term extraterrestrials.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe that we are all part of a large, much larger mass of consciousness, part of what we might describe as God.
Yes.
And so I think that aliens, or what we consider as aliens, or other forms of consciousness, sentient consciousness, are certainly very much a part of our reality. And so I certainly believe in that. And I've had a couple of small experiences that...
Tell me about them.
That led me to believe... it was my first encounter, and again, I wouldn't have put much stock at that point in my life in encounters in the reality of alien civilizations. I had often thought about them, and wanted to believe, I think, but there was some part of me that was really perhaps doubting about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so at one point in an out-of-body excursion, I was suddenly transferred from my body. I felt the vibrations raise and increase to a comfortable level that for me allows the separation from the body of the spiritual vehicle. And I suddenly found myself instantly standing inside what I immediately knew or understood to be an extraterrestrial vehicle.
Oh, wonderful.
A spaceship of some sort.
Can you describe the room for me? Because I have read hundreds of thousands of letters from people, literally. And I put many of them together in our book, The Communion Letters, and I would love to hear if your description of that room sounds like the room so many other people have described. Can you tell me what it looked like?
Well, it was very surprising to me because, I mean, certainly in the books that I had read and certain accounts of UFOs, although my resource was limited to that extent, I was actually quite surprised by what I saw inside. My first feeling or inclination as I'm standing suddenly inside this this vehicle was that there were two beings on either side of me,
mm-hmm.
guiding this episode. Now, they may have very well have been my own spirit guides. However, I didn't feel particular vibration that would identify them as such. And I found myself fascinated staring out a large picture window, if you will.
Yes.
A large glass portal or opening, looking down over a large city at night. I'm not sure where in the world this particular city was, but it appeared, you know, a rather large city, perhaps several hundred thousand or even, you know, over a million people, and just fascinated looking at the city lights from a very high altitude, which you wouldn't normally see, I think, from a commercial jetliner. And it dawned on me, and I just knew. I thought, oh my God, I am inside a spaceship.
Mm-hmm.
And I turned to look at the inside of the building, at the interior of it, and I think that's where most of the surprise was. I didn't see, at that time, I saw no alien life forms. However, the interior was not what I expected at all. I guess I had this concept in my mind that a spaceship would be sort of a circular, round interior object about 30 feet, you know, across or whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
the kind of descriptions that you maybe most commonly see or hear about. And I was just actually almost shocked to see that it had although the walls were circular, the outside walls, the vertical walls, were circular. The room itself, the walls themselves, were probably about two stories, 15 to 20 feet high.
Mm-hmm.
And the color of the paint, or whatever it was that covered the walls, was like a light-colored baby blue hue.
Mm-hmm.
And as I followed my view, or watching, looking around from left to right, I came upon or noticed very quickly this what it seemed to be a control panel of some sort. There were interpretation of monitor-like screens, which would be similar to television screens or computer screens, only some were larger, some were smaller. However, they weren't displaying any sort of standard video kind of thing. It seemed to be displaying energy patterns of some sort. The only thing I can liken it to is earlier in my life, when I was a reporter, a television reporter, would be some of the hues or the energy patterns that you would set up or you would adjust the older format videotapes for, and you could see the energy pattern on a very small screen to to adjust the clarity, et cetera, and the speed of a videotape. But it seemed to be that kind of an energy that was displayed on these screens, as opposed to pictures that we've come to understand and look to in television sets. And I was just sort of surprised by all of this and taking it in and thinking, oh, my God, I'm on a spaceship. This is so incredible.
Well, you
and
know something, Paul?
Yes, dear.
You have passed, because everything you have just said is familiar to me from things other people have told me. However, I'm not going to tell you exactly what and exactly why, because I always try to keep those things secret so that when we get a letter from someone describing their own experience, I can analyze it and decide whether it is a sincere memory or not.
Oh, wonderful.
But I got to tell you, you passed with flying colors. And now with flying colors, we're going to go out and take a break, and we'll be right back. This is Ann Strieber with Mysterious Powers. This is Ann Strieber with Mysterious Powers, and we're back talking to Paul Elder, and we're having a great time here. And Paul's book, Eyes of an Angel, is an extraordinary book. Now, Paul, why did you call it Eyes of an Angel? Did you meet any angels?
Well, you know, that's a strange thing about the book. Throughout the years after these experiences began or started happening to me, I had occasionally, very carefully, been invited to do lectures or give the odd lecture at the at a parapsychology class in another city.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would do that. And many of the participants are the student body, and sometimes it would number in over 100 students in a particular psychology class. And I would tell them about some of the experiences that I was having. So many of them would ask, you know, and suggest that I write a book because I've got, you know, all of these things to talk about. And I had always resisted that notion because I had, by that time, consumed a lot of books or done a lot of reading in about paranormal phenomena, near-death experiences, and so on and so forth. And I didn't feel that there was anything that I had that was any different or any better than some of the many books that were on the marketplace. So I always resisted that notion to the point... I had attended a couple of sittings with psychics, and two of them, out of the three or four that I ever saw, told me or went on at great length about this book that I'm going to write, and to the point where I was becoming very uncomfortable or even angry with it, especially the last lady psychic who told me that. She went on and on and on for about 45 minutes, and I'm going to write this book, and it's going to be blah, blah, blah. And I just resisted, you know, in my mind, and I thought, you know, I was almost getting angry, thinking, look, get on with it. I'm not writing a book.
So, but it was your fate or destiny or karma or something, I guess.
Right. You know, like, this isn't going to happen. In fact, I was so upset with it, I thought, okay, look, if you're not getting anything, lady, you know, and then that can happen in psychic readings. Maybe you only get a message for 5 minutes, and I'm thinking that, well, if you're not getting anything, just, you know, just end it and let me go, but don't go on about this, you know, because it's not going to happen. In fact, I was so angry about it or disturbed by it, I thought it was just sort of a waste of time. I threw away the tape that she had made of the session, and so to my surprise, some... some 2 months later, I attended another program at the Monroe Institute and had an experience. It shook me to the core and changed a lot of the things that that I viewed up until that point. But the book itself it had been directed by the spirit world. And I'll tell you how that happened. After the week-long seminar, on my way home, I had a layover of about 2 hours in Washington Dulles Airport. And while I was sitting in a comfortable chair, I tried to read a book and was quite tired. And so I put the book down, and I could feel myself slipping into an altered state. And suddenly, there in front of me appeared a book, or the cover of a book, and it actually was quite intriguing, and so I focused on it, and I thought, well, this is interesting, Eyes of an Angel, is this something that I'm supposed to read, or whatever, and I scanned the book, and as I'm looking at it, I realized that my name was on the top of it, and immediately I protested, said, there's no way, I'm not writing a book, you know, and... especially about angels. What do I know about angels?
Now tell me, was it the cover of the book as it looks today, the one that's right sitting here on my desk?
Actually, it was very close, you know, because this is, and I don't think that the actual cover itself was necessarily the important thing.
Mm-hmm.
About it was the idea, you know, or the manifestation of the book. But it was actually a fairly close depiction of it with the angel wings and the eye and so on and so forth. I immediately protested it, and I thought, you know, no, this is crazy. I don't know anything about it. And immediately in my mind, I heard the thoughts of my spirit guides or my angels saying, you know, don't worry, we'll help you with it. And the book, the view of the book was replaced by a blank sheet of paper. And because I... you know, have never fancied myself as a writer, and really didn't fancy, you know, all of the work in doing this or getting at it. But there on the paper, on the blank sheet of paper in front of me, words started forming, which turned into sentences and paragraphs all the way down the whole page, and the message was, don't worry, we'll help you.
Do you think you were helped?
Well, in the final result, yes, definitely. You know, at certain times I thought, well, this, you know, where's the big help now? You know, as I, you know, would sit staring at the same paragraph on my computer for 2.5 hours without being able to come up with anything appropriate to
ask. Every writer has had that experience. I'm a writer. Yeah. Whitley's a writer. We've all had that experience.
Yeah, and I can imagine that. But there were the strangest thing about it. I mean, like in the book itself, there's a lot of dialogue and there's a lot of talk with the spirit guide. About the revelations of how things really are and how they work, and people will ask, you know, well, how could you, you know, how would you recall all of those things, you know? The aside from the fact that I you know, certainly took copious notes, I journaled everything, and spent a great deal of time trying to analyze things, and sometimes it's extremely difficult because how do you put into physical words something that is not physical?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Feelings, impressions that are way beyond this world. And it's a strange analogy, and I noticed this actually probably the first time that I had gone out of body. When I was outside of my body, I was totally unlimited. All of my senses were operating at 100 times or perhaps the sensitivity of that I would normally have with my senses in the body, and I'm talking about vision and feeling, especially sensations, the touch of things.
Whitley said he found that too when he was out of his body, and he told me about it. He described it just that way.
Yeah, you know, little things like, you know, in and out of body state. You know, I floated to the carpet. I'm standing on the carpet. And through my feet, I can feel the fibers of the carpet burrowing into my feet, and I can feel the pad, the underlay. And below that, I can feel the plywood. You know, so it's things of that nature. But but most remarkable is the thought process and the unlimited ability to understand very complex things.
Mm-hmm.
But what I noticed that was most significant was that in that freedom, in that ultimate, incredible freedom of being connected with everything and being out of body and away from the confinements of physical form, that the best way I can liken it is when I went back to my body, it was like stuffing a genie back in a bottle.
Yes, I've read many letters of people who've said they can barely get back in their bodies. They keep slipping out and they kind of try and stuff themselves in.
Yeah, it just felt so confining, so uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And especially, and I could feel and I noticed my thought processes, whereas before it was like I was connected to so much information and so much knowledge. Suddenly, it was like something had squeezed my intelligence. and I was back inside my body.
You know, I recently put up a diary about some wisdom I acquired, and I like everyone, I could certainly use some from the other world. And it's a different type of wisdom. It's a kind of wisdom that you can't get from just living life here on Earth. It was the wisdom that someone I had always disliked, I could even say perhaps hated, and with good reason, actually played a major part in saving my life.
Oh.
And probably this was some kind of atonement that this person did before death, because the person isn't dead yet. But it's very complex, and I don't want to talk about it in detail here because it's all written down in my diary entry, but it did show me that it also showed me something that I needed to do. I needed to forgive this person. And now I'm on the way to forgiving this person, not for their sake necessarily, but for my own sake, because I've carried a grudge against them for much too long. And that's not a good spiritual state to be in.
Right.
But it's interesting. I could never have gotten that knowledge just by brain analysis here on Earth, you know, by logic and thinking in an everyday way. I only reason I got it was because I've been able to have one foot on the other side a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Since I was whisked away to the hospital in an ambulance, and it's a gift. The name of this diary entry is Sickness and the Unwanted Gift, because it is a gift.
Yes.
Even though nobody wants it. But you didn't have to get sick to have these wonderful experiences, and I'm very glad about that. I think I'm just too darn thick-headed and stubborn, and somebody had to come clobber me on the head.
Well, to some degree, I mean, I did have to sort of die twice.
That's true. You did. You said that. Yes.
In order to have the experiences. Of course, I had a profound experience, a near-death experience at the age of 12 years old.
Oh, that's right, when you almost drowned.
When in a drowning, and then certainly the...
Or maybe you did drown.
Oh, yes. I was underwater for more than 5 minutes.
Ah.
And I always say that I'm lucky. A lucky person, because I survived two near-death experiences.
Yes.
You know, certainly the drowning and the heart attack.
But I would say you're lucky because you had two near-death experiences.
That's the key. And
yeah.
That's what I say. Is I'm not lucky because I survived it. I'm lucky to have been given that wonderful experience.
To be given the gift.
Exactly. And it is certainly a gift.
It is a gift of wisdom that you can't get any other way. And, Paul, we're going to take a little break now, but we'll be right back. This is Ann Strieber for Mysterious Powers. We'll be right back. Hi, this is Ann Strieber for Mysterious Powers, and I'm finishing up my wonderful, fascinating interview with Paul Elder, who I have had so much fun talking with, but at least I've got about 12 minutes more to talk with him, so I'm excited about that. Paul, I could sit down with a cup of coffee and talk with you all day.
Oh, I'd love that.
Well, maybe someday we will. You never know.
Absolutely.
We're in Los Angeles. Maybe we'll come up there and visit you. Go ahead.
See, I have a seminar in at the Learning Light Foundation in Anaheim. In August, but I wanted to actually just...
Would you please send us information about that? You've got my email address. Yeah, be sure and send me information about that so that I can advertise it on our website.
Good. I'd be delighted to.
Do you have a website, Paul?
I'm sorry, yes.
Oh, what is it?
My website is www.paul-elder.com.
Ah, wonderful to know. We're going to put this up when we put up the description of the Mysterious Powers show so that people can... go to your website, and I think you're going to find you get lots of hits, because we have a lot of wonderful fans on our site. But tell me, I don't know, I wonder if it might be good at this last little segment of our interview to go over how all this started with you.
Well,
I mean, when you had the out-of-body experience and it took you by surprise.
Yeah. Before I do that, I want to just finish up a quick...
Oh, sure. Go ahead. Yes.
Your question about aliens.
Oh, yes.
And I briefly
mentioned... Oh, please. Go ahead.
Finding myself in a spaceship and then disappearing out of it. About a month later after that particular incident, which really opened my eyes to the reality of it, that these things are real, it's perhaps 2 months later, and I hadn't been giving it much thought at all. It was just sort of another informational thing that I picked up, another sort of check mark in my belief system. And when one evening or one night, I woke up probably in bed about probably 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and I knew I had been somewhere, but I wasn't sure that I had been out of body. And however, I was in a state of absolute fear. Terror probably is more aptly describes it.
Whitley and I call that body terror, because our bodies are afraid, even though perhaps our spirits or minds aren't really, but our bodies are afraid.
Right. It's a preservation thing of some sort. At any rate, I looked up or opened my eyes, and I looked up because I had the feeling that I was not alone. And I had this fear and almost a sort of a paralyzing atmosphere about me. And I noticed a very small being that was only, well, probably less than 4 feet high.
Classic description.
Standing beside, I'm not sure what it's called, a dresser or armoire, where we had a television placed in it. And this being was shorter than this particular. And whether it was just my own perception, however, it appeared the being had the appearance of the classic E.T. look.
The big eyes.
Small, mm-hmm. Right. The big eyes, very small, small individual. I wanted, and I felt a lot of fear, and I wanted to scream out or yell, but I was absolutely paralyzed. I could not do anything more than just a whimper. And I'm not sure why, because I don't ever feel threatened or frightened by spirits, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And then the entity or the being or alien or whoever it was.
Or it could be called a gray. There are several different kinds, and these are called grays usually. At least that's what we call them.
Well, subsequently, I mean, I did more reading or checked into it, and it seems to that it would fill that description. At any rate, the gray or the being simply turned and disappeared, walked right through the wall.
Yes.
My house and disappeared.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And only then could I get up, and I was angry with myself for being afraid and for not, you know, communicating or trying to communicate. But I was kind of astonished, so I went out the door of our bedroom and to see if it was still perhaps on the other side. And then I realized, well, you know, not only is it remarkable enough that he walked through a wall, but is the two-story house and a very open area, a great room, and he would, you know, would have been like 16 feet off the floor had he done so. But there was no sign of it, and that was the end of it. I never had the encounter again, and I've always felt very good about it as well. Even though at the time, my brain wanted to translate this into a fear mechanism of some sort.
Well, you know, Whitley still feels fear, and he has seen them and been with them and meditated with them so many times.
Yeah, and I get the sense that whether it's a reaction between our two consciousness systems, and perhaps it's for their protection more than for us. The fact that we have this fear that immobilizes us to some degree. Anyway, that's my story about the aliens.
Do you know some people have, now I don't think you did, because you didn't say, I think you would have mentioned this if you had, but some people have touched them, and when they touch them, and I'm not, again, not going to reveal what they feel like, but when they touch them, every single person, people who didn't know each other, never met each other, didn't know each other from Adam, all described it the exact same way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, isn't that interesting?
Well, it is, and that, to me, speaks so much of the reality of the situation. And you can apply that to near-death experiences, which are more common, more accepted.
Yes.
I think at last report there were something like 13 million people in North America that have had a near-death experience.
I meet people all the time who have. I think it's because we have more life-saving equipment around now than we used to, or something like that.
Oh, definitely. And we can pull people back from, from the cusp of it. But by and large, the amazing thing is whether it's a five-year-old in California or an old lady in the Soviet Union, they describe pretty much the same exact experience.
Yes.
The floating out of the body, the other things involved in it, possibly meeting entities and so on and so forth.
Yes.
If it was oxygen deprivation or to the brain or hallucinations or the body's wish for because it's in dire trauma, to save itself or to wish for better things, if it were any of these things, we would all have different experiences.
Yes, like we have different dreams, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But we don't. By and large, most of these stories are, you know, cookie cutter almost. And whether or not, I mean, and these people have different belief systems in different parts of the world, and essentially they describe the same thing, whether they believed it initially or not, or whether they believe that such things are even possible. So, you know, it does speak, I think, to the reality and to some degree overwhelming proof that the afterlife is real.
I'm thinking of three different ones I've heard, and I've heard many more than that. One was someone who might describe themselves as an atheist or agnostic, and another one was a fundamentalist Christian, another one was a Catholic. And just like you say, all the same, essentially the same.
Yes.
Greeted by a few different people, you know, sometimes it's your relative, sometimes it's ET-like entities, but basically it was the same experience.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, very definitely.
You know, you talk in your book about guardian angels and how you met these angels who said to you that they'd been watching over you for a long time.
Yes.
You don't call them guardian angels, but I kind of figured that's what they were. And I wanted to share with you an experience that Whitley and I had once and to see what you thought of it. This was when we were at Chautauqua, which is a place we used to go every summer, and there was a nearby place, spiritualist camp, summer camp, called Lilydale. And we went there because someone told us there was a real neat psychic there. And we never went to psychics that often. But we went and we talked to him. And one of the things he said to, I forget if he said it to me or Whitley, I forget who, but it was because we had the tape, like you said you had. But he said to us suddenly, do you remember when your car stopped in traffic the other day on the highway and you couldn't figure out why it did, and then eventually it started again? And now this had really surprised us because we had one of those trusty Volvos at that time, and it never did that. And we never did figure out what was wrong, never did it again. And we said, yes, we remember that. And how would he have known that? He said, well, your guardian angel was watching you because there was somebody driving nearby. And if you had kept going, that car would have passed you and recognized you and would have shot you. And, you know, somebody like Whitley, he doesn't appear much in public because he gets near-death threats all the time. I mean, God bless these people, you know. I don't know if you ever got any, but, I mean...
Not yet.
Well, your day will come, believe me. But, I mean, there seem to be people around who just have the killer instinct. I really don't know what's wrong with them. I mean, it really shook us because how in the world would he have known our car had stopped? So I just wanted to share that with you. I wonder if you had any similar experiences with psychics or guardian angels.
Well, not. I did attend, and I don't do it that often. As neither do you. And I did attend a remarkable psychic in the city of Calgary, Alberta.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the most profound demonstration of psychic ability that I've ever seen.
Some of these people are amazing. Yeah.
And I do detail it in one of the chapters of my book.
Yeah.
An amazing thing.
Yeah, that's why I mentioned it, because it's just, you know, it's so easy to be skeptical about this, and I think there are a lot of quacks out there, and then you just meet one who's so real, it just blows you away.
Right, and it virtually did that.
Yes.
But your discussion about the spirit guides and their proof, I mean, when I first met them and they introduced themselves to me, my own spirit guide, and even then I was not necessarily comfortable or accepting of the idea, even though I knew that there was a great deal of familiarity and that they really seemed to love me, or they loved me. But I had never seen or felt any evidence of having guardian angels or spirit guides, or at least I didn't think I did. And when they were visiting me in an out-of-body state, I talked to them about that, and they said, well, they've always been with me. And I said, well, where were you?
Yeah.
I didn't feel you. I didn't hear you. I didn't see you. And they said, oh, yes, you did. But they explained that generally their guidance is very subtle. However, it is very real. And in order to demonstrate this, took me through a couple of experiences. But the very first of it was an experience that I had long forgotten about. And it was an experience of traveling in my sports car to British Columbia, and I used to do this quite often back and forth through the mountains. And on this particular occasion, I had drifted off to sleep while cruising, probably at 65 or 70 miles an hour.
Yeah, I remember reading about this. Yeah, go ahead.
And suddenly, I wasn't aware that I had fallen asleep, but suddenly in my mind, somebody was yelling at me, and just really a very sharp voice, like, "Paul, wake up!" And
yeah.
In an instant, I opened my eyes and woke up, and I was in the other lane heading around a curve with the semi-trailer probably a couple of hundred feet in front of me zooming in, and just had time enough to crank the wheel in the car and hit the brakes, and everything went screeching and skidding sideways, and I just missed the semi-trailer by just inches, and it was their voice. They were the ones who had awakened me and screamed at me to wake up.
Paul, on this amazing note, we have to say goodbye to each other now. And I'm telling you, I've had so much fun. I could just sit here and talk with you for another hour. But Whitley wants his turn to talk to you for the subscribers section. And so I'm going to say goodbye to you now, but I have had so much fun. And go ahead.
It's been delightful. Thank you very, very much.
This is Ann Strieber from Mysterious Powers Radio. I've enjoyed it so much, and I'll be talking to you again in 2 weeks.